working with him on Minder back in the day, and Tony is an avid fan at the moment because he's watching all the Minder
box
replays.
Set in the mind.
He's got the box set. And Dennis started his career as a child actor, but Minder, I mean, everyone loved him in Minder. So I'm leaving you this week with I Could Be So Good For You.
FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Weather on Phoenix FM. Proudly sponsored by SEHBAC, the award-winning home improvement company for windows, doors, conservatories and extensions.
And this is your weather for Sunday, the 3rd of March. Today, it's going to be dry and largely clear through the evening and over now, allowing temperatures to drop with a widespread frost and patches of fog developing overnight. Minimum temperatures tonight will be -1 degrees. But on Monday morning, we are waking up to a cold start with some fog patches slowly clearing during the day. And it's going to be likely to be dry and bright throughout the day. There will be some fresh winds into the evening and a maximum temperature tomorrow of 10 degrees. And that's your weather.
Weather on Phoenix FM, sponsored by SEHBAC, the award-winning home improvement company, proudly serving Essex for over 50 years. Contact us on 0800 666 444 or visit sehbac.com for help with your home.
welcome to the arts programme here on Phoenix FM and welcome to March. We've got a bumper packed full programme with a playlist of the Brit winners to take us through till 4pm. In the first half of the show, we're joined by Debbie Basden, who will share with us her alter ego, Dolly Slateman, the working woman's pub landlord, to tell us more about her show, Menopause Party. And in the second half of the show, we're going to be hearing about how you can get involved in this year's Brentwood Art Trail, as Valine is coming to tell us about how to apply as an artist and what to expect from this year's cultural highlight. We'll also have a bit of national news to keep you all up to speed with what's happening across the cultural world. So let's get on with the show. I'm Claire, and this is the Arts Programme on Phoenix FM. Was our opening tune, and we always start with a musical. That was Mama Who Bore Me by Lee Michelle, and that's from Spring Awakening. That was the original Broadway cast of that show. Mama Who Bore Me is a story, the song is from Spring Awakening, which is a story about adolescent anarchy set to one of the most loved scores of the 21st century. It's about a group of teenagers who are silent and controlled by a censorious society, discover a new world of feeling and freedom outside the classroom with beautiful and devastating consequences. It's from a book and lyrics by Stephen Sater and music by Duncan Sheik. And it was revived recently, a couple of years ago, by the Almeida Theatre, and went on to be part of their Almeida Live series. So you know that there's lots of those theatres that take shows and put them live, and you can go and see those wonderfully on your local cinema. So that one did do a run at local independent cinemas, and it may well be popping up again in the future, so keep a lookout for that one. Glorious. Anyway, this week, it's just me this week, because Natalie is doing all things horrific this week, because she's coming to the end of the throes of a weekend of a horror festival. I'm sure she's been working very hard, so big shout out to everyone over in Romford and the Horror Festival. I hope it's all going very well. But this week I've been out and about a lot with work, but I did have a lovely trip into London yesterday with some friends to see Women in Revolt, Art and Activism in the UK, 1970 to 1990. This was at Tate Britain, and it's the first of its kind of an exhibition, which is a kind of wide-ranging exploration of feminist art by over 100 women artists working in the UK during that period. And it absolutely shines a spotlight on how networks of women use radical ideas and rebellious methods to make an individual contribution to British culture. One of the ones that I liked the most was a group of women who, I can't remember what it was called, but it was something like postal art or something, and they created these, they were kind of housewives or people living, sitting at home thinking, you know, how do I make a statement about feminism and what I want to do in my life, and how do I speak to other women? And obviously in the 1970s, the only way of communicating with each other was by phone or postal. And so they made all these amazing pieces of art from things they just had lying around in their houses. And they kind of created this national network, and they sent them to each other. And that eventually became an exhibition. It went to the Blue Coat in Liverpool and a few other places. But it was like a really beautiful expression of a group of women who just wanted to connect with each other, and using art from made and found things in their house as a way of expressing what they felt as women living at home, looking after children, those kind of things. So it's really, really worth going to this exhibition. It absolutely looks at all kinds of women and the radical ideas that those women tried to have through the 70s and 80s and 90s. And it's also about how their art helped fuel the women's liberation movement during that period as well. It really kind of draws a conclusion, or some conclusions, around what was happening socially, economically and politically in the time. And when I think about that, this was my childhood. So this was in my lifetime. When I think about what was happening in the 70s and 80s, and how I wasn't really aware of what was going on and what those things meant at that time. So there was a whole exhibition about Greenham Common, and I sort of had a memory of what Greenham Common was about and why women were against war, and I sort of had a very brief understanding of that, but I didn't understand that there was a 9-mile chain of women around Greenham Common all holding hands. And this was women of every single age, of every single colour, of every single nationality, who came together to say, no, we really don't want this to happen. And the way that they approached it, and they had a kind of section of the fencing that was part of the exhibition, the way that they really approached it was to think about children. It was the fact that women are the bearers of life, that they really were kind of protesting against nuclear war because they thought about life. And it was just really fascinating, their particular approach to this, and the fact that it was all these women. There was like kind of grannies against nuclear arms and all these other placards that they made. And it was amazing to think that that was just this group of women that created a 9-mile chain around this site. And it was something that I was aware of, but didn't really deeply understand at the time. So go along and see it. It's an incredible documentary about the lives of so many women during that period, and how they formed a movement, really, with all sorts of kind of different ranges of perspectives of feminism. And many of them were kind of challenging each other as well. So it was really interesting on that score. It's open until the 7th of April. And you do have to book in advance, because it's an extremely busy exhibition. When we went kind of after lunchtime on Saturday, it was absolutely thronging. It was really crowded. So we had to kind of wait a little bit for the crowds to go down. So it's very popular. It's also quite interesting just going and seeing who else is in the exhibition. There's an incredible array of women and men that are going to this exhibition, and sort of doing the people watching was almost as interesting as the exhibits as well. Anyway, so that was my top tip for this week, and I'm sure next week we're going to hear lots of top tips about the Horror Festival from Natalie when she returns. But let's get into some music first of all, and of course we can't ignore the fact that it's been the Brits, and so we are having a Brits soundtrack for our show today. Lots of female artists in here, which feels quite right for today's show. So we're going to start off with the best international song, one of my favourites. This is Miley Cyrus.
We were good, we were gold, kind of dream that can't be sold. We were right till we weren't, built a home and watched it burn. Flowers, write my name in the sand. delay. No remorse, no regret. I forgive every word you say. Ooh, I didn't wanna leave, babe. I didn't wanna fight. Started to cry, but then remembered then remembered I FM.
Was a boat, could you steer that sailor? Make it feel like it's a 1960s Hollywood trailer. Classic like cars, classic like Elizabeth Taylor. Did you to romance me? I need a give and not a take.
What I need is cause I
exes, baby, 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 would you?
Could you make it alright? Or maybe that much better.
If you wanted, you could make it all
worth it, worth it, worth it, worth it. Ooh,
when I see the sunrise of you, make it that much better. So we're gonna make it all worth it. Self-residentials. Ooh, baby boy, you got so much potential. I
Looking to celebrate a birthday, anniversary, or maybe an engagement soon? At Brentwood Golf Club, our fully licensed function room is perfect for your special occasion. With reasonable room hire, a fully stocked bar, and access to decorate your theme from 10 a.m., contact Stacey or Chanel in our functions team on 01277 375 101 to find out more. Brentwood Golf Club Function Room, making your celebration that bit more special.
At Hutton View, we are proud to be an award-winning care home which delivers high-quality residential and dementia care. Alongside this, residents can also benefit from a wide range of inclusive services. Enjoy time in the cinema, farmhouse kitchen or landscaped gardens. For more information, search Hutton View Care Home and see for yourself why Hutton View is a care home with a difference. Hutton View, a hallmark care home.
Leolino Billericay is an exquisite modern Lebanese restaurant featuring a beautifully expansive outdoor garden and a private dining room, a perfect setting to celebrate any occasion. We take pride in serving traditional dishes infused with a delightful modern twist, meticulously crafted using only the finest ingredients. To book a table or inquire about exclusive venue hire, call us on 01277 714 7 and join us to indulge in the epitome of modern Lebanese hospitality. Need a will? Facing redundancy or an employment issue? Searching for some family legal advice? Seeking legal guidance for your commercial business? Or maybe you are moving property and are looking for an excellent conveyancer? Whatever the legal service, for life, business and everything in between, Pinny Telford Solicitors have it covered. More online at www.pinnytalford.co.uk or call our Brentwood office on 01277 211 755 to book an appointment.
The team at St Francis Hospice are challenging you to get outdoors and make a difference by taking on the Walk 100 Challenge. Simply walk 100k in March, in your own time and at your own pace, all in aid of your local hospice. Visit the St Francis Hospice Facebook page. You can find all the details you need and sign up for the Walk 100 Challenge.
And we're back in the show, and it's with me, Claire Giroux, here on my own today, because Natalie is doing all sorts of horrible things at the horrific festival. I'm sure she's doing very good things too. And you've got an extra track there. I misaligned my tracks, but you've got Ray with Worth It. And of course, we have to give Ray a big shout out as well, because she won 6 Brit Awards this week, which was amazing, amazing, amazing. Anyway, I'm now welcoming Debbie to the show. Hello, Debbie.
Hello, Claire.
How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for running out of Sunday service in the pub.
I know. They don't even... some people don't know I've gone yet. Thank you, Tyler, for covering my back.
Who are your shout-outs that you have to do immediately? So if they didn't know that you left the pub, hopefully they've tuned into Phoenix FM, and now they do, because you're here. You can't be in two places at once. Anyway, you're here to tell us about your show, your touring show, which has been through Brentwood Theatre, it's been over in Chelmsford, it's going over to Battersea next, and then it's kind of coming back into Essex. And this is called Menopause Party. So first of all, tell us what to expect. If you haven't seen the show yet, what's the show look and feel like? What do audiences get from this show?
Well, it's been such a great experience in the tour, because it seems to have really found its audience, the show. I mean, a lot of laughter. I was at the Headgate at Colchester last night, and I was performing then. And it's a one-woman show, mm-hmm. And the character is Dolly Slateman, also a pub landlady, but a bit more like Bette Lynch stroke Cat Slater. And Dolly decides to go do acting lessons. And she brings in all these different characters to express her menopause.
Oh, okay.
So the idea of it was initially that I didn't... I always wanted to be funny, because I remember when I had my menopause, I wasn't really taking much notice of it when people were talking about it.
Mm.
And I thought the only way I would have been engaging with something is if it made me laugh or mm-hmm. just, you know, entertained me. So there was definitely a move to make it that way. So I guess we... people, I mean, yeah, I hate picking things up, because then they come along and they don't laugh. They go, yeah, what? She said it'd be really funny. But on response to what the audiences have been doing,
yeah,
there's been an awful lot of laughter. And a lot of people come away and, gosh, said, I really did learn something then.
Yeah.
I didn't realise that, that fact or, you know.
So the mechanism of comedy is also a really good way to help people learn, isn't it? Because some of what you're doing through the show is about education. It's about
Oh, God, yeah, it's fascinating. Because, you know, I've started really looking into this now, that when we laugh or when we find something funny, we're letting our guard down. Mm. And there is a little door in our mind that seems to open, and then we'll let information in. It's a bit like when you had your favourite teacher at school. The normally the favourite teacher at school was a really good lesson. It was fun.
Yeah.
Or you would have laughed. And you learnt more then. So it's exactly with the show, really. So I guess we did. And there was definitely a move in the writing of it that I would do that. That you get that sort of information through one way or another, and hoping that people were laughing. So, you know, I've done a lot of research on it, and the factual research, and I thought, right, okay, now interpret this and put this in Dolly's world. How would she put that back out there, regurgitate that information?
How did you come up with the character of Dolly then? What was the inspiration behind her?
Oh, Dolly was quite funny, really, because when I was, I've always run pubs, always been involved with the part, only for a few odd years I was teaching, but the majority of my working life I've always worked in bars. And whenever any kind of like sexual innuendo popped up or that sort of conversation, I'm a bit of a prude, right? And I wouldn't be able to give any banter back. And I used to always imagine, I'm maybe that sort of person that can really give it back as good as what they got. And I went to the short version of Dolly being invented. I'd already started doing a little bit of acting. And I went to a funny women workshop, which are really great workshops for people that want to go into comedy. And Dolly just sort of came out of... She'd already been there bubbling away. I think I called her Maureen at first. And it was just... She sort of started to evolve. And then I realised, well, okay, well, with a character act, and I never... If someone told me I was going to do stand-up, I would have said, no way did that ever happen. But it, the way my life was at the time, the children were smaller. You know, we were always, like, doing some sort of work, you know, our own business, whatever. And it was easier to get out and do a bit of stand-up 5 or 10 minutes here and there, and you're learning the craft all the time when you do that sort of thing. And then as I did that, Dolly got a bit stronger and a bit more rounded, and I wrote my first show called Red Hat No Knickers, and I will revisit that. But again, it gave me an hour on stage, and I was able to really get into the character. And so, yeah, now she's kind of there.
And what's Dolly like? Tell me, paint a picture of what she's like.
Oh, Dolly, there's no taboos on Dolly, and she doesn't care what she says. She thinks she's... She reminds you, I don't know if your listeners remember, Georgia Mildred?
Yes, yeah.
Well, she always reminds me of that Mildred sort of character, but, you know, she was always like a bit of... just had a lot of confidence in herself.
Yeah.
Nothing really fazes her. You know, if anything's going on that's not quite right, she'll adapt it so it suits her, and... It's kind of, in a positive sense, all about her. And her domain is the pub, the public bar. The pub's called the Manky Bush. That's her name by the regulars. And, so she's Queen Bee in the pub. And she, I guess really, Dolly thinks everywhere is the pub.
Yeah.
So if Dolly was here now, she'd be telling you how to run the radio show, or have you thought about doing this?
Yeah.
So that kind of berry... All the soap characters we've ever seen, basically. Yeah. If you imagine, and you know,
all the soap characters that run a pub, so you've got all of those kind of EastEnders, Coronation Street, possibly a bit of Crossroads thrown in.
Yeah, because they're all very strong women,
aren't
they?
Yeah, they are really strong.
And do you know, and I was always surprised, Claire, that no one had ever done this before.
Mm.
No one had ever taken, you know, you've got Al Murray does a pub landlord, which I think is absolutely amazing. But and always have done, but no one done a pub landlady.
Yeah,
and maybe it's because the time's right. I don't know. You know, it just happens, doesn't it?
There's a bit of me that wants to look at a piece of research around pub ownership in the UK, and over time, like if you could go back in time and plot it, because I've worked in lots of different pubs, and you know, student unions and all sorts of local pubs and big national pubs, and there tends to be a man that's usually like got their name on the door, or is the person that kind of comes down at the end of the night and, you know, clears everyone out. But there's always this woman. Always a woman who is basically running the show. And it would just be really interesting to see that kind of dynamic between the publican, who's got their name over the door, how many pubs in the UK are run by women, and how many, even if their name isn't on the door, how many women are actually running that pub? Because I think that, like you say, the role of women is a bit, in those pubs, is a bit more invisible whereas, you know, everyone knows the name of the publican, the man who owns the pub or runs the pub, but he's not always the one that's there all the time. I mean, there's a couple of pubs that I go to locally, and I think, oh, yeah, I see the guy who runs this pub. He kind of pops in and he does his little showman thing and then he walks off again. But I see the woman working really hard and kind of, you know, making sure everyone's having a good time, making sure everyone's got what they want, looking after the staff. And it'd be really interesting to see that how often that pattern emerges across pubs in the UK.
Yeah, definitely. But, I mean, just get one thing straight here in case anyone's listening. We're very, very down the line with the work with me and my husband.
Yeah.
I don't really think it out. Why didn't you mention me?
There are some good partners.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I do think, without because I've said that no statistics, I think there's a change going on. And I think there has been a change going on for a while where women are being more acknowledged in the hospitality industry. And I think we've moved on now, I guess, really, in a more of a managed house sort of way of working, whereas before it would be a lot more independent, you know, sort of businesses.
Yeah.
And it was very much... And the pub trade has changed.
Yeah.
It's very much about food now.
Yes.
So, you know, before it would be a bit argy-bargy, you had a bar, community pub, it was all about booze and drinking. And that's kind of like... There are pubs like that still, obviously. You know, I've worked in many pubs like that. And they're really good pubs. It's just different pubs for different services. So I do think now there is a change on the horizon of hospital... Well, massive change anyway, since COVID.
Yeah, and I've been reading a lot about... kind of the effect of society and things like coming through COVID, coming through all of those things on this kind of Gen Z generation, and you know how that they're changing the way that we function as a society, and their needs are really different. So there's a bit we're going to talk about later in the national news where there's more book groups now than there were pre-pandemic, and they are quite a lot of them set up by younger people, and there's all sorts of reasons for that, from in the need to have social connection with people in an environment that feels safe for women particularly, but also the kind of accessibility of book groups, particularly the online ones. So you don't have to make this really, you know, book groups before the pandemic were always in people's houses. It was always about drinking loads of bottles of wine and talking about the book. And it feels like this article I was reading was talking about how this is moving away from being in someone's house and drinking countless bottles of wine and actually doing an activity together where books are part of it, or you read a book and then you go and see a show together, or, you know, so it's more than the kind of the sitting around drinking is not the format of those book clubs anymore. And then having the book club in different places. So, you know, one of the things that it was talking about as well is that the book clubs that pop up and use different spaces, so whether it's coffee shops or bars or pubs or whatever, being able to go out there and meet other people out somewhere. But it's not necessarily around the drink, but it might be around the food. So there's quite a lot of foodie book groups, so you kind of eat to match the book, those kind of themes that are coming through.
Oh, no, I get that. I mean, and I think society's attitude towards alcohol has changed dramatically. And you see younger people now, younger people not drinking like other generations did before them. So the markets do have to change. But it was funny, I was speaking to somebody the other day and they were saying that their dad hates going out for a drink now, because he'll go into a pub and they'll say, have you booked a table?
yeah.
And that's the shame, isn't it? That's the shame. Yeah. There is still a big market out there where people just want to go and have a couple of drinks and they can't because they can't get a table.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, that is the way things are at the moment.
I think we're also in that space where some pubs are still doing that, or restaurants or whatever are still doing that booking system, and some aren't. And, you know,
But I think trade's changed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the trade has changed. That you're to keep a pub going now, you have to go foodie.
Mm.
And a bit like you just said about the book club.
Mm.
So the attitude, the alcohol has really changed. Mm. And I think that would have happened anyway without COVID. I think it's just sped it along a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. So going back to the show, so here's kind of your wealth of experience as a pub landlady, and you're kind of channeling this in through your alter ego. And how did you set out to write it? What was the kind of process that you went through? Because obviously, so you'd done stand-up comedy before, you'd done the kind of shorter excerpts.
Yes.
So how did you develop something into a full, how long is it?
It's now, it runs about 85, 90 minutes.
Okay, so how did you kind of get it developed to that length?
Yeah, so it went over a period of time, actually. So I first wrote it, I was teaching at the time, and Don't go into teaching, folks, when you're just going into the menopause. Close to 16 to 18 year olds. That's interesting. Don't get me wrong, I love the students, but my brain had just turned to a marshmallow. Mm-hmm. It was just ridiculous. But anyway, so I'd already invented Dolly. Dolly had been around for about 3 or 4 years, I guess, when I did that. And at the time, I remember when I was and I really wanted to teach. I was really excited about teaching. And I remember that as I was going into that process, I thought, what is going on? Like, the menopause has started to occur. And I thought, right, I've got to write about this. So that's when the show started to, I started to think about it. And I thought, right, well, if I get Dolly talking about the menopause, like, as I said earlier on, what would have taken my attention?
Mm.
I looked online for some information, resources, and there was nothing. Mm-hmm. The only show I could find that actually entertained through with the content of menopause was Menopause the Musical.
Mm-hmm.
I went along to Menopause the Musical, very entertaining, but it did not teach me anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it wasn't something that I would reproduce myself. So I started thinking about it. Then I started talking to Leicester University.
Mm-hmm.
And we got chatting, and they was doing a public engagement program at the time. This was before COVID, now about 2 years before, 3 years before COVID. So I started working with them, and then literally the night I was meeting them, I thought, I've got to think of a couple of characters that they would think were really serious characters. So I thought, what characters would they be? And I thought, right, I'd do a judge and a doctor. So literally, I threw them in before the presentation the night before. And I'd winged it, this presentation with these academics. And I had pictures of Al Murray, Cat Slater, and Bette Lynch on this presentation. Talked about leopard print, because that's Dolly's thing, leopard print. And saying about, like, leopard print has got no class status. It could be, it goes right across all classes, and it always has done. Anyway, they loved it. They loved the idea to get in touch with a particular type of audience, e.g. Women menopausal. Anyway, so I wrote the show then, and Debbie was in it then. It was Debbie with her alter ego. So the alter egos of Debbie would have been Dolly Slateman, the judge, and Dr. Mina Paws. So then did that for a little while, and then COVID happened.
Mm-hmm.
But it was so funny, just before COVID happened, I got in about 3 shows, and it was something. It was all very new. I'd done Leicester Comedy Festival. I'd done Brentwood at the time. Anyway, COVID happened, and everyone just went, boom.
Mm-hmm.
But then as in that process, I started re-looking at it, and I started thinking, right, okay, and tweaking it. And I then contacted a guy called Chris Head and sent him the script as it was, and he said he was interested in directing it, because I'd done a couple of writing classes with Chris over the COVID time. And Chris directed it, and it was quite funny. One day we were sitting there, and I think he was really trying to get up some courage to tell me, and he said, Debbie, I was thinking, maybe we should just take you out of it and just have Dolly in it. It'd be a lot funnier. I thought, great, thanks, Chris. That's lovely. So he took me out of it.
Yeah.
And then it took on a whole new thing, because it was literally, it was sort of telling my story a little bit, that I'd done acting lessons, and there's little bits of story in there about when I actually really did start doing acting lessons in my mid-40s. And then Dolly took over. And then that opened up the doors for lots of things. She could bring in the pub, mm-hmm. bring in her customers. And it then started becoming more and more, I guess, grounded,
mm-hmm.
and a bit more weight behind it. But to actually write the show, I did an awful lot of research. I actually read about the menopause a lot. I was very lucky when I was with Leicester University. I had an opportunity to speak to some top academics.
Mm-hmm.
And I read loads of statistics. And it was just really interesting, because I was going through the menopause myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was at the height of it. And what was coming across time and time again for me was, what a lot of people would really benefit is from talking about it,
mm-hmm.
and actually raising awareness and talking about the taboo-ness.
Because
mm-hmm. I couldn't get it out of my head, when you think we're in the 2024 now, but at the time 22 probably, that no one was talking about it.
Yeah.
And I had so many dreams and ambitions of what I wanted to do, e.g. that when I was in the teaching. I thought, why didn't no one let me know this could be this debilitating, that you couldn't, for a little while, you couldn't do anything? And when I was younger, like in my 20s, I had serious endometriosis and I had quite a lot of surgery. And I was always then really fascinated the power of hormones and how this could affect somebody and your perspective on life. And I always think to myself, now, I was quiet then,
mm-hmm.
but maybe I got to that point, Dolly was invented, And I thought, you know what, you've got a bit of a platform here.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, I remember doing one show, a lady came up to me and she said to me, do you know what, I was going to leave my husband today. Should be, you just made me realise throughout that show, I've got to look at myself. I'm not saying everyone's like that. But
did she stay with her husband?
I don't know. I don't know.
Who knows?
I don't know.
Who knows?
Fascinating.
It is fascinating. So, I mean, I think that there is, there's all sorts of challenges in there about misinformation about the menopause, about the fact that, I mean, God, let's not get started. The NHS is amazing. We're not going to criticise the NHS, but the way that the medicalisation of women comes from a male standpoint, doesn't it?
So, oh my God, yeah.
Everything that anyone is taught in medical school is based on male anatomy. So, you know, there's all sorts of things that are clearly going to be wrong with that approach to medicine. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, the misinformation, the lack of information, the lack of understanding, and then the taboo and all those other things. I mean, I think the more... And we've seen this with other things, haven't we? We've seen it within mental health, for example. The more we've talked about mental health over the last 10 years, the more that it's now acceptable in a workplace to talk about mental health, the more it's encouraged for young people to talk about how they're feeling. You know, so we're not there yet, but we've moved the dial with something like mental health, and it feels like menopause, that's another thing that we have to move the dial on significantly. Half the population goes through it.
Oh, it's mad, isn't it?
So we have to talk about it. And the other thing that I really reflected on, I started my menopause when I was 42, and I remember going to see a nurse for a usual routine, a female appointment, and when I was about 44, 46, and she said, when's the last time you had a period? And I said, oh, about 4 years ago. And she looked at me and she said, how old are you? And I said, well, I'm 46. And she said, You haven't had a period for 4 years. Have you spoken to somebody about that? And I said, well, I told a doctor that, you know, hadn't happened for about a year. And she said, well, what did he advise you? What did they say? And I was like, well, nothing really. She was like, but you might need this, you might need that, you might need, you know, you might need calcium, you need to think about your bone structure now, you need to think about this. And I was like, nobody told me any of this. I've just been carrying on, like, you know, it's just finished. Well, you know, there's still some ongoing effects of it, but it's just gone. So what, I just carry on. So I think that whole kind of lack of information is also there. The other thing that really struck me was as I was going into menopause and all of my hormones were literally draining out of my body and I was losing all that estrogen and all the rest of it, both of my children were going through their own stages of teenage-ness.
And it's called a hormonal hot pot.
It was a massive hormonal hot pot. And I thought, isn't that mad? Well, you don't realise that when you're, you know, when you have children in your 30s, as they are going through their teenage changes in life, you're going to be going through a significant... And it's... as theirs is a mess of new hormones and you're kind of depleting all your hormones. And I just thought, oh my God, we're going through this at the same time. This is awful. This is why teenagers and their mums struggle. Because they're both going through these massive changes in something that is affecting your physiology. I mean, it's like, to get to the science of it, this is not something that women are making up. This is a physical thing that's happening in their bodies. So, yeah, there's all sorts of things that we can talk about in a minute, but we're going to get back to some music first. And we're back to talking about dinner. Last of the Dinner Party with Sinner. Before it felt like a sin. And that was The Last Dinner Party with Sinner, one of the Brit Award-winning new bands, I think that one was. I've lost my notes of what I said about them, but I think they were the new band of the year. So I've been talking to Debbie about her show, The Menopause Party, but we're just going to go a little bit back into your background, because this is all sort of happened in the last sort of 10 years or so?
Yeah, 10 years. Yeah, I think I was about 45 when I started. So
what was that trigger in your 40s where you suddenly went, I want to go and learn how to act and perform on a stage? What was that? Where did that come from?
It was a crazy weekend. So I had already done, I remember we had a pub in Dagenham and we kept arguing. So I said, right, I'm going to do an A-level, right? So it was going to be spreadsheets. And I came back and said, I'm doing film. Anyway, kind of
sorry, you went from I'm going to go and do an A-level that's about spreadsheets to run a pub and you came back with film.
Yeah, come back with film. Because I always wanted as an actor. I always wanted to be an actor when I was younger. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to do this. Anyway, did the A-level, loved it. And I said, do you want to go to university? Now, I was in my 30s, like middle 30s. And he went, no, you're not. And I fell pregnant with Billy, my youngest. Mm-hmm. Went to university, done my film degree, came out and we started a new business. So I completely had no... I just thought, well, it'll be useful for me in years to come, different way of thinking, blah, blah, blah. And we used to put in mobile bars. They're called like a kegerator unit, long story, but we used to put in mobile bars for people. And EastEnders film set rang us to put a tap and a beer in one of their, in the nightclub scene. And I got so excited, honestly, I got my hair done. I would have got a new jumper.
It's important.
I thought I'd be like Lady Gaga.
Yeah.
We want you. Anyway, so Tony couldn't believe I was actually going to help him. He thought, what the hell is going on here? So I've gone on, and I was so excited to be on the EastEnders set. Just the idea, and I thought, all these feelings came back about doing performing, because I never thought... I mean, I was in my 40s and I thought, there's no way I'd ever be on a stage or anything like that. And the next day, I went shopping at Lakeside and I saw the characters Shirley and Heather shopping in Lakeside.
Wow.
And I thought, this is a sign. So I talk about this in the show, but it's from Dolly's perspective.
Yeah.
So I joined the poor school for about a week. I only went for a week's course because life's always very busy. You know, you've always got like working or the kids, whatever. And I went to this week's poor school course. I thought, oh my God, I'm in love. I love this. I can't let it go. Then I started getting acting lessons off somebody else. And then the stand-up came. Then someone said, you should do comedy. And that's how Dolly started.
Right.
So, and then with Dolly, I kind of like evolved more with then doing shows rather than doing... It was easier, in a strange sort of way, it's easier for me in my life and the schedule I have is to do a show, know where I am, do that show, get it done and come back again. When you're doing stand-up 5-10 minutes, you've got to literally, well, I'll do that gig, and you sort of run around a little bit, you know, a bit of headless chicken. It was for me anyway. But I've ended up doing that. I've done Edinburgh Fringe about 3 times. I've done Brighton Fringe. I've done, I think they had one, Chelmsford there a few years ago. So, you know, and I've done theatres now. So, yeah.
Why do you think that you didn't... do that in your kind of 20s or in your kind of late teens? Why do you think it took you until you were in your kind of 30s, 40s to really think you could do that?
Well, I think I had a very, you know, obviously you probably tell by my dulcet tones, I had a very working class upbringing. And, you know, I always wanted to go to drama school when I was younger, but it wasn't a done thing. There was one person in Dagenham that went to university at the time, I think. And I went along... Just with that, you started going out on a Friday night. Then it was more about seeing your friends, going to the pub. And slowly, those sort of dreams or those sort of aspirations seem to dissolve
into, I mean, I get, and a life took over, didn't it? I suppose you were, had to earn money, you had to do those things.
Oh, you've always got to earn money. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, you don't go into the arts because you going to want to be famous or earn money.
No.
And if you do go into it that way, thinking, good luck to you. You've got to have something a bit more than, you know. But since I've done that, I was telling you earlier on, I've now joined. See, doing comedy was great, yeah, and I love doing comedy, but that's all very self-fueled and what I think was right, and obviously Chris doing the directing of the show. But I thought, now I want to act now. Mm-hmm. I want to learn how to do characters. I want to learn. And I Am Pro came out of nowhere. Charlie Brooks and Ben Brooks are the founders of, mm-hmm. It's an online platform. And I ended up speaking to Charlie Brooks on Instagram.
Yeah.
And I accidentally went live. I didn't know I was going live. I was going live with her, tell her about the menopause party show. And then I started looking up their platform. And it's for someone like me and anybody else, if you can't afford to go to drama school, mm-hmm. either it's through money, mm-hmm. or through time, it's perfect, because you can go on, do your online class, and it's getting something fueled. You're starting to go. And obviously it's down to you to go off and do something more with it. You know, it's hard. I mean, without that, it's not an easy career move to go into.
Do you think maybe that's kind of made you a better performer, having had that journey that you've had, where you didn't, you know, you've kind of gone through life and had those life experiences, and then have been able to channel all of that into your performance? Do you think that kind of makes you a
maybe
better performer?
Claire, you're always learning, though.
Yeah.
So, you know, I could never say what would make me a better performer. I think familiarity with doing stage work and confidence. Mm. Like when I first started doing it, honestly, my whole family were thinking, what are you doing?
Mm. You know, I was going to ask you what the reaction of your close,
terrible at first.
Close friends,
like,
and family were.
I used to lie and sneak out and go and do a gig with Dolly in my handbag. And I remember being at Edinburgh Fringe and crying in a bush because I died on stage awfully. And you will, you know, you still will. But it's just not so horrific now. And I remember being in the bush crying, and my sister said, we don't know what you... I said to my sister, I don't know what I'm doing here. She went, we don't know what you're doing.
But have you had loads of support from them since then? Because I imagine that now that they've kind of seen what you've done with the stand-up and then kind of developing into your own
I think it gets accepted.
Show,
I think when people realise, actually...
Do they get it now? Do
they kind of get... part of Debbie's life now. And you get it. I think once you start believing that, and a bit of self-validation... Yeah, this is what I want to do. You know, I went to see a play last week, and they started. I got all upset. I'm thinking, oh my God, it's amazing, isn't it? I love it. So, because you know where you want to be, I suppose.
Your face just comes to life when you're talking about it. Your face lights up. So it's kind of, you're clearly doing something that you absolutely love doing.
Well, I was performing last night, and I was absolutely knackered. I really was. And I got to the theatre. I love being in a theatre when there's no one in there and you're talking to the techies and everything else, because it then starts to come to life. And I thought, oh my God, I'm all right now.
So tell us where you can see it, because it's going to Battersea next, isn't it?
Yes. So next week, which I was really excited about, because International Women's Day is next Friday. So I have got 3 nights at the Turbine in Battersea, and that is the
great
5th
venue.
I haven't been there.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah.
So it's the 5th, 6th and 7th, mm-hmm. and doors open at 7:30. Get tickets at the Turbine.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really excited.
And then you've got one more coming back in.
I've got one more at the moment. I come back to Housted on the 20th of April at the Empire. But to be honest, the tour has gone so well. I mean, it's practically nearly sold out every show I've done.
So there's more.
Yeah, oh, definitely. I think it's just starting. I think it's just, you know, people are buzzing about it, and it's lovely. It's found its audience.
Okay, well, look, we're going to have a little bit of music, and then we can do some final shout outs and what next for Dolly. So let's have this next piece of music. We're going to have SZA with Kill Bill.
I'm so mature, I'm so mature. I got me a therapist to tell me there's other men. I ain't the one that I just want you. If I can't have you, no one should. I might do my best. Not the best idea.
I get the sense that you might really love her. This text gon' be evidence. This text is evidence. I try to ration with you. No murder's a crime of passion, but damn, you was out of reach. You was at the farmer's market with your perfect peach. Now I'm in the basement, planning on my day. And now you laying face down, got me singing over a beat.
Celebrate a birthday, anniversary, or maybe an engagement soon? At Brentwood Golf Club, our fully licensed function room is perfect for your special occasion. With reasonable room hire, a fully stocked bar, and access to decorate your theme from 10 a.m, contact Stacey or Chanel in our functions team on 01277 375 101 to find out more. Brentwood Golf Club Function Room. Making your celebration that bit more special.
The elements influence us each year, whether it's heat in summer or cold in winter. At JWD, we can take care of all your heating and air conditioning needs at a reasonable price, with finance available through our partners Can Do, if required. Our engineers give their promise to be clean and tidy, whilst